podde tillbaks igen. Linus på baslinjen. Ja, han är tillbaka igen. Linus på baslinjen.
Welcome to a brand new episode on the road of Linus på baslinjen podcast. Today together with Andre Tonates in English, as you can hear. Andre Tonates is a coach in Näsby Park Tennis Club in Stockholm, Sweden. He has an experience as a coach from building up and coordinate the National Center in Zagreb for the Croatian Tennis Federation. One of the players Tonates coached was Marin Cilic from 14 years of age during his junior years. And during this time, Cilic won the French Open and reached the position as number one in the world. Andrej came to Sweden to work for the Academy of Koalteko at the Royal Tennis Club, where he spent 3 years before switching to Näsby Park's Tennis Club, where he currently works. In this episode, we talk about how to structure a successful national center, the key factors behind Marin Cilic's success as a junior and as a senior player, why Academy of Koalteko and Sweden overall struggle to produce international tour players but are successful with sending over players to the college, the difference between Swedish and Croatian coaching styles. We talk about what differs between the players' mentality in Sweden and Croatia. We talk about Andrej's view of Djokovic and Murray from the junior tour, and why Cilic succeeded in the transition from juniors to seniors. As you can hear, a super full and interesting episode. So yeah, let's go. Welcome Andrej Tonates. Now I have the big pleasure to welcome Andre Tonates to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I will start with asking in like 2 or 3 minutes, can you briefly tell us who you are and your background before you came to Sweden?
Well, I'm coming from Croatia, where I started to play tennis and spend my junior years there. I was among the best juniors in the country, played for national teams in all categories. Under 14 national team, we were like even second in Europe. I was a national champion under 18. Internationally, I was around top 50 in Europe in ITF junior rankings. Played like an ATP tour event in Croatia when I was 19 before going to college. Then I played at the University of West Florida. I was double champions in college tennis. While I was in college, I was a hitting partner to Tuomo Majoli at Bollettieri Academy in Florida. That was actually my first experience around coaching a super talented junior. During my last year in college, I realized I could not afford to play pro, so I decided that I want to stay in tennis and put all my energy into coaching. Around 95, I graduated and had to make a decision if I should work in USA or Croatia. Then I moved on to Croatia and finished my master's degree in sports science with a thesis in tennis. In my last 20 years in Croatia, I had numerous roles in Croatian tennis, like from traveling a national coach, national head coach for juniors, head coach for National Tennis Center. I was a Davis Cup coach when Ivan Ljubicic was a playing captain. My coaching years with Marin Cilic were super exciting, and I learned a lot, met many people. Marin then became a junior and then after men's Grand Slam champion. So after many years in Croatia, I wanted to change the environment, and I had huge respect actually for Swedish tennis, but I wasn't aiming actually specifically for Sweden. But then I got an invitation from Kungli Academy to help in starting up their academy program. So I stayed there almost 3 years and had nice memories. Then I decided to stay a little bit longer in Sweden, and now I'm in Näsby Park and I'm still trying to improve every day and enjoy being on a tennis court.
All right. So
that's short.
Short summarize. There's a lot of topics I really look forward to ask you about. But let's start with your work in Croatia when you worked for the Federation. And I have understand that one of your main tasks was to build up and coordinate the National Center in Zagreb. Can you tell me a bit about that job? How was it to build up and to coordinate a national tennis center in Croatia during that time?
Yeah, that was a super exciting time. Croatia didn't have a national center before, I would say, 2005. Federation always had a little like a base, but as a national center where you're almost home on your own over there, and you can do what you can, that you can plan all the activities. It was really nice to finally get it. But there's always been some, like in many federations, there's always been some issues if there should be or should not be a national tennis center, because there's always pros and cons. It all depends of the country, of course, and depends of the people that are involved, how good and with what quality that national center will produce players, which is actually the main goal of the national centers. You are aiming at only really like high performance tennis. I was really enthusiastic and like a clear mind about connecting players and trying to make a national tennis center like a neutral territory for many players, because this was the main goal. At that time, Croatia also had a lot of players scattered around in small clubs and or small regions. And the goal was to have best players at the same place training. And I think we succeeded, because now when I look back, there were really great players, and they stayed for a long time. Marin was one of the first players that I got involved with over there and followed his development. After that, many other joined. One of them were also Borna Čorić and Ana Konjuk, which also after became Grand Slam junior champion. So we could say that there was a good base for, I mean, men and women from junior level to the really higher ATP level. And that was like a base where players actually could meet.
Which would you say was the key factors to make it this successful? Which it, obviously was.
The key factors. Well, first, to me, it was an amazing place, as I said, and it was not a luxurious facility. It was just what you needed. So we had like 9 indoor courts, 9 outdoor courts. There was a fitness. There was a nice gallery, so that spectators could watch matches and practices. And actually, the gallery was high enough so the parents couldn't coach. it was really it was a good setup, and there was a. The hall was quite big, and it was like an indoor on the gallery. There was like 150 meter track. Because it's actually very, very important to have this, because as we all know, the fitness part has become last 15 years so immensely important in developing the tennis players. So it's not, of course, it's the tennis skills, but if you have a good fitness base, that's actually just an enormous plus. We had dorms for 30 people. That means we could be able to organize activities, camps, players staying over there, tournaments every weekend in different categories. So you could, players actually got used to coming, spending some time, leaving. What made it successful? It was, it's not like one thing that made it like a magical thing. It's like a long term thing. But I think that you have to start with a couple players or a one player that is really producing good results, and then of course the other start trusting the program, starting to trust the environment that is positive for tennis players. This is, I think, important that players and of course the coaches around the players and the teams realize that's good for the players. We had actually the structure was that there was like a really from I've rarely seen that. It's it's like you have a lot of academies and national centers, but this a lot of centers sometimes are not as full with players. That's actually and that center in Zagreb was really from 7 in the morning to like 6 p.m. 7 courts or 8 courts were there. Maybe it was 1 or 2 courts for recreation or for like tennis schools, but like 7 courts were just made for competition, and so many different categories at the same place, targeting the same goals, many coaches coming in. Some are, there were not, of course, Croatia didn't have such a big budget, so there were not many were like, had a salary from the federation, from the region, but there were coaches coming from the clubs as there with their best players and training over there, because the like a regional federation, like you have this Stockholm regional, that they also were using this national center as a base. So we actually had a regional, good regional players connecting there with the top national players in all categories. As I said, coaches, sometimes 2 or 3 coaches on the court, three players on the court, exchanging ideas. That's like something that you really is difficult to maintain, to keep. So that's, I think, that was the one of the like important factors that made this happen.
You told me one of the juniors you worked with was Marin Cilic during his junior time. And I think, when did you start working with him? How old was he? Like
Marin was when he moved to Zagreb, because then after that there was like the Zagreb was the base, and players that were not originally from Zagreb, then they moved or they had some other arrangements so they could move with the family, or sometimes even the whole family would move to Zagreb. But Marin moved to his relatives when he was 14. Actually, I made a good contact with Marin. His 14 year was when he played his under 14 Tennis Europe Tour, the most highest ranked tournaments. And I was at the time a national coach for juniors, so I was traveling with Marin a few weeks on the most important tournaments. He did the final of the European under 14. That was he lost to Bautista Agut. So that Bautista was at that time really, really strong player and like
still pretty good.
Yes. then yeah, it was they actually. It's so interesting that we can talk about that later, but so I don't go too far away from this topic. But after their pathways development a little bit changed, and then Marin got faster in top 100 than Bautista. Bautista needed much longer time to get there, but we can talk about that maybe later. But just so Marin was then after the summer he had to make a decision where to train because he's after the 14 years he was ready to move to his club and his town when he's from didn't have so many players, so Zagreb was one option. And we agreed that told him, look, it's national center is starting, and it's we'll take care of Marin.
So when Cilic came to the national center, how did his setup look like in the beginning, and what was the important factors in your work with him for him to one day become the number one junior in the world?
Marin started to train gradually, so to get to twice a day practice sessions. He wasn't training right away 4 or 5 hours a day. We didn't want that. He was his body was still not ready. He was like skinny, tall. He was you could see that he's like very still has a lot of room to improve in his body. So the fitness part was very important, and he had a very good fitness coach, Ljuban Tekolović, one nice person from the university of like a sports university. So the fitness coach was able to also explain him and give him a good base. So at that time, I would say that at that time, of course, the fitness was important, but maybe as not as much as it is now. Now you know it's just goes without saying that you have to have a fitness program connected to tennis. Otherwise, you just can't handle the body can't handle this stress on the body that everyday training is putting. So important thing is that like ratio of course, yeah, like individual training sessions some, but like sparring trainings and the ratio of those sessions change like from the period to period. Like I would say like from 20 to 80%, 20% more like individual and 80% like with a different sparring partners. That I remember I had like a 3 month when he came, it was like a first 3 month training plan for Orange Bowl. Orange Bowl was in December, of course. And so I didn't know how that gonna work, but it Marin really was such a nice player to work with. after that, after a few years, there was stories that from other coaches, and when we talked about what you were also asking, why did he manage to make it, and maybe four or five in the players that were training with him didn't. But
so what one was
example,
the secret?
The fitness training, fitness coach came with a group and then just, okay, you have to do something. I'll be back in 20 minutes or, and of course the four or five of them were chatting and Martin was working what he was supposed to do. He's the only, so he was not distressed by or taken, his mind was not taken away from the, his work. So he was, okay, I need to do this running or need to do some warm up. He was doing it on the side, and the others were still not doing it. So I'm saying he was really devoted to his work, what you told him, and he knew that this was good for him, and there's no time to waste if you are supposed to do something. So that's the one of the things that it can for sure differed from the player that succeeded at the end or the player that didn't. The sessions were, when Marin was on the court, it was just, you just, there was no questions about the intensity of his putting effort or not putting effort. Especially you can see that when the tough times are coming during the week, or he managed to get out of this comfort zone. This is especially very important for the young players that talented players that need to start learning how to work a little bit harder. From the 14 or 15, when you really, your body gets ready, you really can start working harder. And Orange Bowl was, I would say then, after this first trial period, was a quite a success. He played a semifinal. He was third at the end. He lost in semifinal to Del Potro.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the names that you, at the end, you meet, and then you start just growing up with them and seeing them on a different tournaments, checking how each one is developing in what way. But he lost to Del Potro. Marin lost to Del Potro quite easily, I would say. Del Potro was at that time a more consistent player, a little bit more matured in his body, and it was the Potro won then Orange Bowl, and Marin finished third. He beat Donald Young, which he was a really good,
he was super talented, super
big star for US in USA, and he was actually 1 year younger than Marin as well. That's I'm actually very excited and lucky that I was able to follow a player and be a part of the development process in the years where actually now those big Grand Slam winners nowadays were developing, and Djokovic and Murray. Really interesting.
But like you say, for example, Djokovic and Murray, who you met on tournaments, now, like when you look back, what could you see from their daily work that might have helped them reach that super high level later on? Is there something you can say in common for those names that succeeded later on?
I started to see like Novak and Andy from when they were more regularly, when they were 13, 12, 13. really amazing experience. I still remember Novak when he was 13. I was at that time, we played like Croatia, Serbia, this Tennis Europe under 14 match. At that time, there was he was number 3 boy for Serbia, but a year younger, because at that time Tennis Europe had 4 players. The Scopa del Sol score was 4 singles and 1 doubles. Now they changed the format to 2+1. So then you had 4 players playing against 4+1 doubles. So Novak was number three, and number 3 players played like last one. So I said, after the whole day, look, this refreshment. Look, this guy is playing. It's effortless, stepping in the every ball. Amazing footwork, early preparation. I mean, you could see a great player, but of course you could not tell that he's going to be like the almost best player ever. Novak has been very often in Croatia, and he's actually been to the national center, what we were talking before, in Zagreb, because we had a lot of futures as well, and he came, and when he was really young, and played futures over there. So Novak is very respected in Croatia, and is as a great person and athlete. So, I remember one moment when Marin and I had a dinner with Novak when it was at the French Open. I came with Marin for the juniors, and Novak was he's 1 year older, and he already started with a pro tennis, and he qualified for the French Open for the first time, and then we were like, oh, he was really like excited, and he was, because it's really, he was at that time at 18. So then I said, Marin, yeah, you really need to push so much more with the balls are so heavy this year. I don't know, but like, you have to push so much more than usually with your legs. It's like, it's amazing. The balls look so heavy. So, those are like something that I remember really, like, those were things that the champions talk about. They put it down to simple things. Really, I mean, the balls were really heavy that year. Roland Garros balls can really get heavy on those courts. And Marin ended up winning junior Grand Slam. That was a really nice, a good success, because he was then became first Croatian in the history that won junior Roland Garros.
Wow! How was that feeling for you as a coach?
Yeah, that was really. I was like relieved, because it was like after like almost 3 years of working, you really get to the top. Of something, your goals, and because of course winning the Grand Slam is something that you as a coach, when you coaching a junior, you aim,
of course
you try to aim, and it's sometimes it's a small things. I remember second round, it was like set down, of course you could have lost the match, but then went better and better. In semifinal, it was a great match against Andy Murray. I remember it like this, and even before the match, when Marin got to the semis, I went to see the opponents, and they were like, Murray played in quarters against Del Potro, so that was
no really, bad names,
really big names, and Murray played like. I mean, he was like a favorite at that time. He was already moved up to the, he was like around 300, 400 ATP already. But he still played, got a first seed in the Roland Garros. And you could see the really nice touch. And I, first thing I noticed, of course I knew him from before, but I, and at that period, maybe I haven't seen him for like for 2 years because he was different. He had played different tournaments, and I saw a lot of drop shots. So then Martin said he's going to play a lot of drop shots, so really be careful. So then it's not only because of drop shots, but of course he was, Andy was a tricky player at that time as well, and he could destroy Martin's game if he wasn't really careful. So, but that was really like such a amazing match from Martin. So you can see that under pressure he really played great. So it was like 6-7, 5-6-1, and then. Well, the funniest thing was that Martin was not seeded, and then he came to the final. Always, you always play against seeded players, better players. But then at the same time, you get to the final of Grand Slam, and somehow the draw came that he played with a Dutch player that was also not seeded. So it's actually a.
All right.
He was at the, so then he played a French Open final, and you are a favorite. So that's a really like wow, it's a new experience. And then he had to handle the pressure because we all know how the players. Yeah. It's always sort of easier to play against if you don't have anything to lose. And so now it was like expected of him to win, and it's a final of Grand Slam. So it's. So it was a little extra pressure, but he managed. And really, then was a really it's a sort of a those things give you a little reward for your daily work, daily long term effort that you put in, player and also as a coach. Yeah.
Before that final, when you say that he suddenly was maybe the favorite in that final, how do you as a coach talk to him before that kind of match, which obviously you both really want to win?
Yeah, it's you have to always make a balance. You don't want to put too much pressure, but in a way you have to talk that, of course.
Both
pressure
knows
is here.
That this,
yeah, that's how it is. You got to do it.
Exactly.
What routines? Did you say? Routines were, of course, you have to do your routines. Routines are so important. The thing that was, I think, very important is that. How we handled or how Martin handled this period from the semifinal to final, because semifinal ended on Friday midday and the final was on Sunday like 1 o'clock. And then so this is like almost like 48 hours where of course he received a lot of calls, press started to put in a lot of questions. So this is, it started to become real that you have to like handle the pressure. Of course there's no one word what you can do. You're just trying to do your routines as a coach. You're trying not to get overwhelmed with these situations. Try to keep cool. This is the but still in a way active when you have to be active on court, on training. Make a good training sessions on Saturday. On Saturday, make a good training session. Maybe not too long because he's already been a long week. He can feel the ball good and just do a sharp training session so he can be ready for a Sunday's match. And of course, it's important how you start the match. That's why Martin sometimes had a bad start first set, then he woke up and managed to win without problems. But then if you start bad, you don't want to start bad in a Grand Slam final.
No.
On
the way for Marin to become the number one junior in the world, how would you say, how big was your part of that success as a coach?
Well, you never know that, but it's what percentage is your success? But you try your best as a coach.
But what do you think? Would he become the number one with another coach as well? I don't know.
We would never know that. But I think I did my best, and that's the important thing, is that you can put in a lot of things that can be. Sometimes it's luck is not here the option. Luck sometimes you're lucky in a couple tournaments before, so then you get to that place sooner or later because of a couple lucky matches or a couple. But definitely consistent. I think I gave a consistent, not only training, the whole period was, I tried to be consistent as a coach, positive feedback. Of course, I was demanding as well, and Marin was able to accept that, and he was really, a special guy, and. I cannot say what would be, but I think we did quite good as in that development period, because at that time not so many players were able to become, because of the base, they were not staying in Croatia for many years. So they either, they stayed starting the club, then started to go to a couple other countries, maybe some academies for, and so it was like a good, like a structure and sort of a project for a Croatian player in Croatia. So I think that we started to build a more of a belief it's possible to do it also in Croatia. We have ability, we have a possibility to make a top players, and it's a good environment for players. I'm pretty sure that, like I said before, I have I have a huge respect for Swedish tennis, and I'm pretty sure that that's how you felt as a in Sweden when the golden age was at the time, the atmosphere was good, and people were picking up. So it goes like that.
We will talk more about Swedish tennis soon, but Marin Cilic also made an impact on the senior tour later. He actually made it to the top as a senior player as well. What do you think was the key for him to succeed even after the junior time, which is a quite difficult step?
Yeah. So at the end of the, during the his years and more towards the end, Bob Brett was really made a good contact with Marin, so Marin then, Bob Brett was then his coach when he was developing into a top player and breaking the level from top 100. So he was his like supervisor and coach. So
why did you guys split?
It's not like that we split. It was a really long period, and for me, and this was for me a decision, because I also had a for me Marin was, of course, as a player, most important, but I also had a national center to work. So then I would really have to like make a decision after like 3 years what I want to do. And as my one of the reasons was, of course, that I had a job and I had to balance with my family, which was really supportive of me. And I this success for sure I wouldn't do without support of my wife, which is so important, and that coaches know that when they go into those kind of things that you have to have a support, otherwise it's not easy.
So he started with
Think that also was a good decision, because Bob Brett at that time had a lot of players that were like a Kiefer. So he had a lot of players that were around really top 50 ATP. And so he could help Marin even more. Marin was then still in a national center as a base and coming. But he was then also a lot of weeks traveling. And so that was actually a good decision for him. He managed to break into top 100 like 2 years, in 2 years. So it was quite good.
What do you think was the reasons why he succeeded even among the seniors? And you told me before that, for example, Bautista Agut had a longer period before he broke through. What do you think differs between those who succeed and not?
Marin was, as he started, he was very self-conscious, down-to-earth guy, did his work. Of course, he had extremely good tennis skills and abilities, good base at the end, and then he always had a good game plan. So he knew how to win match. He knew how to win points. That's what the key is. Of course, he's a hard worker and everything. But if you don't know how to win points, you can't compete on a high level, because the difference between high level junior tennis and once you go to the professional level is that you get players that are more demanding and you don't get free points. You have to find a way. Marin had weapons, so he could do damage with a forehand, he could do damage with a backhand. Sir was getting better and better as he was getting stronger. So you have to have a weapon, of course, to break through. His game plan was good, and the most important thing is that he was mentally tough. So that means he was able to keep focus for a long period during the match. That's something that's the only way you can win the older players, older or more experienced, when you are as a young player moving and trying to beat them.
Okay.
Hi, my name is August Holmgren. I've traveled and been on camps with EuroElite for 8 years. EuroElite has played a major role in my development as a tennis player and a person, and they work with more than 1,200 other players from Denmark, Sweden, and Norway during the last 20 years. It all starts with the summer camps, and EuroElite offers 8 different summer camps in Denmark and Sweden in 2022. They're high quality camps with 5 days of more than 18 hours of tennis, fitness, theory, and UTR match play with a focus on becoming a better match player. I went to my first summer camp when I was 10, and then my first Tennis Europe Tour when I was 11. After the Tennis Europe Tours, you go on ITF Tours. I've been on pretty much every ITF tour that EuroElite has to offer, twice. EuroElite also focuses on seeing the culture of the places we go. I remember seeing the great golden Buddha statue in Thailand and the pyramids in Mexico. Sign up for your elite tours and camps because they provide three things that are essential for the development as a tennis player: a balanced life, a great environment that both challenges and inspires you, and you learn how to have a disciplined mind. It's as simple as that.
Since a few years back, you have now worked in Sweden, André. How come that you decided to move here?
After many years in Croatia, like 20 years, I wanted to change the environment, try somewhere else to work, and then wasn't like really aiming at Sweden, but at Kungliga Tennis Academy, they invited me, and they were starting to this academy project. It looked interesting to me, so it's always good to like start something that can be like it was a little bit reminded me of start when I was also starting with structuring the national center, and so always it's good to start maybe in a different country. So I said, yeah, it was, why not? It's an interesting project, and I don't regret it really. It was a great experience. 3 years, I learned to. Learned a lot from the also mentality of Swedish players, people. And then
can you say what you think differs between the Swedish players' mentality and, for example, the Croatian players you worked with?
So, yeah, the depends, yeah, different, depends on what age group we are talking about. But let's say,
but for example, the players you had at Kungliga, was like, example, was it 16, 17 years old, something like that?
Those players were, they were just got out of high school, so elementary school, so 9 years,
yeah.
So they just got started the high school, so it's a little bit different system in Sweden. It's 9 plus 3 years, and in Croatia and some other countries there is 8 elementary school plus 4.
Okay,
so you already have 1 year longer in school that you need to is of course obligated to do because, as we know nowadays as well, it's very common that top players after elementary school takes like a correspondence school.
Yeah,
so that's
We're one year later here in Sweden,
yeah,
with
so
that
was,
option.
That was the first thing I realized is, yeah, it's already our players, Croatian players, started to really train seriously when they're like seriously, meaning involving yourself 2 times a day. When they were 14, and in Sweden they have to do it when they're 15, which for like majority of players, it doesn't make such a big difference. We're just talking about maybe really top talents, and that can make a difference then, because then it's still you like are a little bit behind in I'm not saying in points, ranking points. This is like a little bit of a trick nowadays. Everybody's trying to look for those ratings and points, but it's in a way how you train and get your body ready for what's gonna happen. So get your body ready for 2 sessions for a little bit more intensity, and this is most important. And the mentality is that Well, it's not like the we had nice players that that participated in the academy program, and so I can only say that maybe the Croatian players are a little bit more used to they're a little bit more maybe adjustable, because Croatia is also in a located in a different part of Europe where it's a little bit smaller, and it's like so it's surrounded by so many small countries. So players from Croatia start like when they're 12, it's very easy to go to in 2-3 hour drive. You are in Austria, you are in Italy, you are in Slovenia, you're in Hungary, you meet many different cultures, different styles of play. In Sweden, of course, obviously Scandinavia, it's not so many different play styles. It's of course you don't get like a difficult player from Romania that is putting everything in, and then you have to struggle. It's for example, there are many. So it's also the a little bit different is that definitely that what we were aiming at to prolong the clay court season, but it's difficult to prolong the clay court season in Sweden because of the weather, of course. And so we try to go a little bit earlier to like some tournaments in France, or try to meet. And of course, it's in a long-term development, you're supposed to lose, and if you're not adjustable to the new conditions, and you come against the French players, they of course they are in better advantage, but you are the one here to try to see what you can do and push your limits. I think that that maybe this is like the one little small difference, maybe a little bit adjustable because of the location, of course. Adjustable. Able to play different playing styles.
Can you see any difference in the way we how the coaches organize the practice, or how we practice here in Sweden compared to, for example, in Croatia? Or is a lesson more or less looking the same?
Yeah, that's always interesting topic. As anywhere in Europe, in the world, in Sweden, there's also many coaching styles. So for sure, it's I have seen the work of the best coaches in Sweden, and they are for sure on a high level. So
how is their coaching style? How would you describe the Swedish coaching style?
I didn't completely finish, but
continue with that.
I think that really, really high. It's of course the knowledge is here. Sometimes coaches cannot show their true potential because you have to, especially in the clubs, you have to deal with a lot of players and a lot of different categories, and expectations of, for example, parents are extremely high for the maybe club level. Which so I think the coaches in most well recognized clubs in Sweden are doing what they can, or doing the good job. What a style. It's not like you also have in Sweden more energetic player coaches, a little bit less energetic coaches. In Croatia, maybe they are a little bit more energetic. It's a little bit of the, as well, the environment and how people are. But I think that for developing top players, for sure there are great coaches in Sweden. It's just if they are put in the right environment, and if they have the right players, and of course if they have a willingness to do it, push it, and that's the important thing.
You now work in Näsby Parks Tennis Club, but when you came to Sweden, you, like you said, you worked for the Academy of Colteco. And if we look at that academy, almost all the players, both from your time but also after your time, have ended up at college. Why do you think the academy have not succeeded with helping players reach the professional level? What's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, regarding myself, of course, maybe what my maybe I had a little bit my impact was not I would say maybe I was not there long enough to make like an amazing impact over there, or but that's only in my opinion. But of course, the to make the, I'm not saying only about Kungliga Academies, I mean, you're talking about probably all the like academies as well, or programs in the Sweden. Is that the college option is looks very appealing to players and parents, of course. So that is for sure important aspect. Also, so we will have to like, there's a lot of things that and points that we need to open here. Why is that? Of course, it's a trend as well. I mean, I could say in Europe, but in Sweden specifically, it's a big trend that between players that it's, they can go to college, get some education, continue with the playing. They get some scholarship, so it's still can play on a good level, and parents don't have to. They have to, I mean, pay of course some, but it's they can get some scholarships, so it's not that of a big expense. What is needed? It's important that the junior, so the junior level, excellent. We have this system, ITF tour. You pretty much know what you need to do, what you need to accomplish to get to the Grand Slam level. For the entry into the ATP or WTA, it's a new ball game. You have to go to ITF Futures. You have to go digging up those things. It's 2 years of really difficult time period where you need to get in with the. I mean, with a team, some kind of a team. So it's difficult to go and difficult to go alone, or difficult to go without a good plan. And when I'm saying a team, it doesn't have to be like necessarily a team of player. Team means somebody that can support you, a coach. You must have a budget. So that's, I think, where many players get stuck. And it's something that you actually have to do a lot on your own as well. On your own, as you as a player, family, somebody needs to like say, okay, we want this, because you can say that you can see that a lot of now newcomers that are top, Zverev, Tsitsipas. I mean, even Ruud, he was in your podcast as well, so he talks something about that. But Raducanu, they all were helped and pushed by father or parents that at the end got helped from the federation, and they got then some kind of a support. But it's always so, especially in maybe a smaller countries, smaller budget countries, and Sweden is among those. It's not like LTA or USTA. So of course, then it's it does take a lot of your own commitment, and it's if academy wants to do it, of course it's you have to spend you have to completely devote one or two coaches to that group of players that will try to push through. And then even in if you make this kind of arrangement, in 6 months you might have players that are not going in the same direction.
Yeah.
So it's expenses get, and the time that you spend, and time, of course, for the coaches is expensive. So this is a for sure main part. You need much bigger commitment, and so who is ready will push and will go.
Now in Näsby Parks Tennis Club, which is a highly respected club in Sweden, would you say that the setup and environment there is good enough to produce players of international level now?
Well, Näsby Park has been producing players on international level throughout years, and
not super high level though.
So I haven't been so long now, but let's say that I would say, if you said like super and international level, you meant professional. Okay, I thought the top junior international level they did. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So obviously we had so there's a good base for that for sure. Obviously we had hard times last 18 months with the hall burned out, and we coaches stayed together, tried to keep the program of top juniors. We stayed loyal to the club. I think that was very important, and that we kept the program going and tried to keep the best best players so that we can when we get the hall, which we started now again, sort of restructure. That means give the really good and high priority to the players that we see, that they give everyday commitment to tennis. I think that's the most important part now. Coming first with a good attitude and then show a good effort, then something can happen. This is, I think, the goal for our club and probably the most clubs in best clubs in Sweden. So there is a possibility. When you have court, tennis court, covered, nice. It's not cold. It's a very nice heating system. Because I'm saying this because sometimes you take this for granted that you have a nice hall that is heated. In France, where the best players come, many halls are really cold, and they manage. So our hall in National Center was also cold a lot of times because the many different reasons. Of course, it's expensive to heat. The halls were big, and it was difficult to heat it up. So, of course, it was cold. But in some period of your development, it's okay because, wow, you come to the nice hall. It's, like, amazing. So As I said, if you have a court, if you have a player, you have a will, you have knowledge, of course you can do it. Then you bring the players, make a team, it's make a good atmosphere. It is possible to do it. There's a lot of course, obstacles, different things that you need to consider. But I'm quite positive, try to be positive, especially whenever it's something about tennis. And I always give, I never say like it's not possible, something is not possible. You know? So it's, I think it's if you have a good commitment, if you have a like environment, it's possible. It's possible.
I have heard, Andre, that when you came to Sweden, you got sort of surprised over our tournament structure here and how many tournaments a player like must play during a year. We have the national championships, we have the regional championships, we have SEB Next Generation, and quite many commitments for the better players. Can you explain a little bit more about your thoughts there?
Yeah,
if that's correct for the first.
No, but it's for sure when you have a player and we have to make a distinction of what players we are talking about, because I'm not here really to criticize the work of Federation, and Federation is doing what it can. But when you have a player, they would probably go more for a over 15-year-old players when you need to, like, if you decide, okay, we need to get to Grand Slams. As when you start making a plan, you can see that there's not so much time. Mm. It's especially if a player is still not going all like on distance school, so they're still going a lot with regular schooling, which ITF also like support, so they support both. And online ITF doesn't want players to leave school, and so that's for sure. So we as coaches are here to do what we can when we see what player decides. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that I counted 30-40 days that those national tournaments commitment, or maybe for best national players that are like in national teams or need to play. And so we are talking really about a small percentage of players. So I think it is difficult then to attack the international level, because every tournament, every day of even a national level is tires your mind and body, of course. Even though for the top players, maybe first 2-3 rounds are not that difficult. But they are still have to be there all day. They have to still spend a week or 9 days there in the tournament. So I'm pretty sure that neither Zverev nor Tsitsipas, I know pretty sure, and Marin Novak didn't play 30-40 tournaments under 16 in their category national level. Eh? Mm-hmm. So they play maybe national indoor and national outdoor. So they have to play something, of course. But so we have to make here the. But for majority of players, it's great. It's really great, because those tournaments, it's, I've been to many. So it's Salk is nice, Bostad. Yeah. Göteborg SM Junior, then Summer SM. I mean, they're really nice, nice tournaments to play. For maybe 97% of the players, eh? But we are, yeah. So. But if you, so it's always a little bit of a a borderline where you draw the line, those which ones are here to play in boys 16, maybe that's considering now 2-3 players in this age group. So
an interesting topic is always the involvement of the parents here in Sweden. What's your view of the parents' role, and maybe do you think it differs in Sweden compared to your experience in Croatia?
Yeah, as we are seeing now, and those upcoming new players, both sides, men and women, parents are for sure involved a lot in tennis development. Either they bring the child to the tennis court and they watch their matches from the beginning, younger categories, they drive here and there. That's absolutely great. And the difference between like maybe parents in Croatia, they are a little bit more involved financially, I would even say, in the project development, and then expectations are of course higher. In Sweden, it's actually clubs are giving actually a very good setup. The prices are reasonable, and the coaches are doing really a good job for the on the club level. So it is just example is I was at the U.S. Open meeting, junior players meeting and coaches meeting in New York, and tournament director, in his opening statement, greets everybody and says, yeah, you are here, top 50, top 60 in the world, congrats. Thank your parents for this opportunity. Thank your parents. Of course you had coaches there, but thank your parents, because to get 50, 60 in the world, It's really difficult. Only some programs or some can really do without much parent involvement, because of all things being said, and a lot of budgeting issue and a lot of time issue that it's needed to develop a player. So we are talking about really top 100, top 50, top 100. I really, in the last 5-10 years, haven't seen a top 100 player that hasn't been with a big involvement, junior, or even say junior, with a big involvement of parents. Now we just have to talk what kind of involvement that is. So what kind of a what differs a good parent from the not such a good parent? Né? The one that is, the parent definitely has to be supportive, positive, has to back you up. Of course, in Sweden, for example, there is a very difficult school and club and all kind of scheduling you have to take into account, and what you can do to reach your high level is to travel during the holidays. That's very, very simple. That's not so many weeks that you can travel during the year. We also said because of the national schedule, even though. So you must have a national schedule during this. So you take some days off school because of the national schedule, and clubs can follow that and cover that, and coaches and clubs. But if you want really a go to aim at higher level, then you need to take some of your holidays time to, yeah, just take the player to your son, daughter, to Tennis Europe tournament under 14 somewhere. Take the ITF sometimes, just when there's no club involvement, if there's no Dave involvement, what you were also talking.
Yeah, you relate, yeah.
So, of course, there's options, but you really need a lot of days because in one of my articles or small research in that I presented at the Worldwide Coaches Symposium, when I had recorded all my activities with Marin when he was 15 year old. So he was he spent 120 days traveling. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
So for a 15 year old player. So that's played around 80 singles, 20 doubles matches. So he went up to hundreds together a year. So that's a lot of all matches, a lot of, and I don't think that club can manage that. And it's not the club is not, not capable, but it's actually not structured to do those kind of days with a certain player. So that's why I'm saying the cooperation here has to be good. The one other thing is that I listened to what some other Swedes did, like Ken Carlson. He was in your pod, and he said, yeah, he talked a lot about tennis, and with his father he discussed tactics. So many players today, that was nice. Of course, it's sit down, watch the matches, talk tactics. That's a quality tennis. You can do that with your children, but a lot of parents now talk about tennis ratings, tennis rankings with their sons and daughters. Catching these ratings, it makes such a big pressure on the player, and then the end thing is that you just don't play anymore against opponents. You just play against some numbers, and you're afraid to play against low-ranked players because they will put your ranking down. It's actually a little bit of a big confusion that. So of course it's important. Okay, you have some kind of a rating, but in the development years, it's about developing your game. And the rating will go up when you put the ball in the right way. That's what I wanted to like. Yeah.
Yeah. You touched just shortly about that. You said maybe in Croatia the parents are more financially involved. Is it more expensive to play tennis in, for example, Croatia than in Sweden?
It is more expensive because the clubs are not structured so much for competition players to give them such a high level. Because high level training is for competition is has been shown is producing a good college players. So that's a quite a high level. So it's a so for a parent in Croatia to have a high level player like that even can compete for a college, it's a more involvement that either like hiring a coach, paying for courts, sometimes clubs do support the best players. But I'm saying for the majority of players, it is much more affordable to play tennis in Sweden because you get help from the the help from the club is for sure not as much as you get in Croatia.
Mm. Okay, yeah. Before we go into the last questions, Andre, you started to work in at Colteco here, and now you're in Aspby Park. Do you think you will stay in Sweden for a long time, or why have you chosen to stay here during these years?
I like Sweden now. I haven't thought about it before I was coming here, how long I'm going to stay. But after a few years, also because of my family, and so I stayed a couple more years, then year after year. So it adds up. Now it's a few years past. So it's I cannot say how long. It's at the moment is it's a nice period, and it's for me. It's a, I think, I mean, it was great, really, especially like nowadays with COVID restrictions. Last 2 years, mm-hmm. Sweden has been really open for tennis, and it was really mm-hmm. nice to work. So it's you never know how every year will go by. But at the moment, and also like I said, I try to I've been many years involved. As a person, I'm quite satisfied that what I accomplished. So now it's for me, it's nice to have some goals on the, I would say maybe on a different level, but still some good goals. Mm. And it's still fun and enjoyable. And there's a nice working atmosphere. So the balance of working and living is at the moment good for me.
Mm. How many years have you been here now? It's in Sweden?
Five, six years.
Mm. All right. Okay, Andre, the last questions here. Can you tell me something you have changed your mind about the last couple of years?
Well, I pretty much have a clear picture what I have been doing and where I want to go. So just maybe small adjustments in every 5 years in my teaching style. Mm-hmm. Now, that's, for example, especially in Sweden now, I'm a little bit more patient than before when working with players. It's also in a way challenging and nice.
Mm. All right. What is the biggest waste of time in tennis?
For example, for a player that is not interested in tennis, everything is a waste of time. And for the champion, there is no waste of time. Because if you don't practice or if you don't think about tennis, then you rest. No? For me, there is actually no waste of time in tennis. Either you produce a champion 24/7 or you work with other players trying to find a way what they can improve. So that actually, I am a little bit of a tennis fanatic. So I don't think everything connected to tennis can be taken into some positive direction.
Okay. Interesting. A movie or book you have been inspired by?
I've read many books but of course you can't, the classic is like Winning Ugly by Brett Gilbert.
Yeah.
That's a little like
that's
classic.
A classic. Yeah.
So it's then now I read Breath, James Nestor, for example. How you breathing is helping our performance.
Okay, so interesting.
Maybe from mouth breathing shouldn't be more nose breathing. So it's like different. So now I'm
all right.
But that's so I've been.
You read a lot.
I read, when I can. I'm not. I don't read so much because not so much as I could, of course. Then you can't. I'm spending a lot of time on court, and I read in my spare time. Because I like to do research, and I did my research when I was in tennis. I think we went up to the. I did like my master's degree in sports science. So that's I really try to also look in tennis from different angles. When I was doing this research for my master thesis, was doing like a. Something that is differs winners from losers on the clay court, what kind of patterns of play they're doing. So I was like analyzing the French Open matches and it's my thesis about that. And
wow, that must
like
be interesting.
I did like a 30 matches, but that the good fun thing was that after that because you really when you see in like you know, I mean it took some time of course it's but I was really then knowledgeable about clay court tennis even more
what could you see
there are different patterns where the winner of course you what is very simple and everybody knows but winners do make less mistakes than losers, special patterns of play that is repeated where the winners play more often in some specific target areas of the court. The target areas where we as a coaches we make some target areas do you divide the court in the court in maybe four different fields so over the service line those first and fourth quarter for example of the tennis court can be are definitely the ones that winners the one that were winning the matches are hitting more consistently in those targets areas at that time a long time ago, so it would be interesting to do a new research, because nowadays, as we know, every 5 to 10, 5 years, some adjustments are made in men's and women's tennis, but every 10 years is a really big adjustment in change in how the players. Are doing and either if it's a strength of powers of power of more shot powerful more powerful shots or it's the angles we saw drop shots have been used more 15 years ago it's like oh we don't drop shot you never should drop shot now drop shot is a good good weapon man.
I see what do you believe in that everyone else think is crazy? If there is something,
I think the crazy thing is the whole life as a tennis coach. When you are devoted to your coaching job, your family life suffers for sure. It is challenging to find the balance between work and family. So, if you are a tennis coach, then really try to appreciate your wife and family, because without that, it's not easy. So in order for to be a tennis coach, you really must have a huge support from your family. I did for my wife. That's really impressive woman. So she did a great job with helping with my kids and our kids. So it was, so that's why you can accomplish some things. So that's just...
That's super important, especially with all the traveling. Last question. Would you like to recommend anything?
I would like to say for the like a little conclusion that, of course, very simple phrase that has been always is used, like hard work pays off. Of course, that's for sure the strong meaning. And so if you are committed, you have a long-term view, doing your effort, going through the tough times, for sure it will pay off. I try to explain players that it's once you're like 15, 16, 17, you don't know if that's like worth it or not, this kind of a commitment to tennis. But I think it's always it will always get back to you, and the more you put in, you will get back. And one other thing is like it's very common that older players, like more a little more experience, have a hard time playing with younger ones trying to play with them. And so play with the young ones, especially the talented ones. It's you never know if that's like a new Novak you're playing with. It's so why not give respect for everybody else, for everybody, anybody on the other side of the net. No?
That's a great finish. Thank you very much, Andrei, for taking your time. It's been super interesting talking to you.
Thank you. I hope I didn't offend anybody. I hope I had some good information that can help everybody that is involved in tennis. And I'm around, so of course it's enjoyable to be around. And see you around.
Yeah? See you around. Yeah. Thank you, Andrei.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode with Andrei. It's a super cool experience Andrei is having working with a player like Marin Cilic, helping him reaching the top of the world as a junior. But also when we're looking back to see that Marin had the ground to succeed as a senior player as well. Hope you were enjoying this talk and found a couple of things to learn from Andrei. At least I found it super interesting and helpful to listening to him. Another episode is coming in a couple of days, so let's talk to you then again, and thanks for today.